This is HPR episode 2574 entitled, Personal Cash Only Finance. It is hosted by Klaatu and is about 30 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is, Klaatu discusses the advantages and disadvantages of going, mostly, cash only.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hey everyone, this is Klaatu, and you're listening to Hacker Public Radio. This is an episode about personal finances. I talked about personal finances in a previous episode, speaking very specifically toward the big mystery of saving for your future and investments and things like that that no one ever explains to you. So in this episode, I want to do a complete 180 and talk about what if you don't do any of those things, the conventional wisdom. What if you reject that and decide to take part in none of it? Now, part of this episode is really just a thought exercise, something to ponder, sort of to imagine, what would happen if I went cash only entirely, no bank accounts, nothing like that. But part of it is experiential. I've flirted with this a little bit, and so I'd like to share at least some of my experiences and also some of the things that has kept me from actually implementing it, at least completely. Whether or not that's a good idea is up to you, and I think largely whether it's a good idea or not really depends on what kind of future you are intending to build for yourself, because certainly there is no denying that if you do not invest your money in something, your money will then not increase. It will not grow. That's what investment is. It's taking, in this context, your money and purchasing something that will in the future be more valuable than it was when you first obtained it. That's all investment really means. So to turn your back on the idea of conventional job, paycheck, banking, and so on, and attempting to live your life without those features / limitations, it's kind of an interesting idea to explore. And I'd like to explore it here, because it's something that I've had a little bit of experience with, although not to any real extreme, which at least as a thought exercise, I think might be kind of interesting to consider. So here we go. Let's consider it. So first of all, not having a bank account has a couple of different benefits, I guess, and that would be that there's really no way for anyone or anything to leverage a judgment against you, deciding that you owe them money. So, I mean, they can make that judgment, but there's no way for them to then get to the money that you supposedly owe them. So that's kind of cool, because a lot of times in adult life, you end up owing something to someone, whether or not you agree with that or not. Not all the time. I'm just saying it can happen. There are little weird disputes that happen here and there. You know, maybe a landlord claims that you didn't pay the security deposit and you claim that you did, or maybe someone there's a car accident and someone says that you owe them some amount of money for a repair and you claim that they owe you for a repair because of circumstances. So there's lots of little things like that happen in the real world, and in theory those things can culminate in one power saying, okay, well, you owe this person money. Now, they can say that and they can declare that all they want, but if there is no bank holding your assets, then the buck kind of stops with you. And if you say, truthfully or not, that you have no money to give, then there's not really a way to verify or not verify that. So that's kind of an interesting angle on why one might not want to use a bank. Now, in my experience, not having, and of course there's the obvious just kind of like, well, maybe you want to have the physical asset, you know, rather than abstracting money away from yourself and into a bank, which is pretty much I think a modern de facto, maybe you prefer to hold on to the money and say that if you have $1,000, then you want to see $1,000 dollars in your pocket. You want to have that somewhere that you can point to it and say, yep, there it is. So in my experience, not having a bank account is quite difficult. And I've never been without a bank account entirely, because any time that I've worked for practically anyone, with a couple of exceptions, but most jobs that I've had, and certainly all like, you know, real jobs that I've had, they simply pay you with either a direct deposit or a paycheck. And the direct deposit requires a bank for it to get deposited into, and a paycheck requires that you cash that check. Now, you can cash a check without having a bank of your own. You can go to the bank that issued that check and redeem that check for cash, or you could go to a cash checking service, which is less optimal because they'll take a cut. They'll give you the cash in exchange for the check, but then they'll take some of that cash for themselves, because now they have to deal with this check. They have to go to the trouble of getting it cashed, and they have to take any supposed risk of maybe that check not being any good. So either of those two options are available. It's just the trouble of going to my employer's bank every time I get paid to go get the cash has been something that I've never really relished. So I've just had a bank, and then I get the money from the bank whenever I need it. So that's, but you can do that. You can work and not have a bank account. It is possible. Now, the next thing that you might worry about are things like rent and food. So, I mean, food's fine. You can get that with cash so far. But the rent thing is a little bit trickier depending on what your living arrangement is. If you are very low, let's say, maintenance, and you're just living however you might live, maybe you've got a roommate that you can give cash to, maybe you don't have a home at all, maybe you have an arrangement where the landlord is nearby and you can bring them cash. Now, I've done that several times. I've had several. In fact, I don't think I've ever. No, that's not true. I did have one apartment for like a summer that was like one of those big kind of big corporate sort of controlled apartments, you know, where you don't know who the landlord is, because the landlord is like this company that owns the building, you know, management, you know, property management company, and they own the building, and you have no. There's not really a person behind the living arrangement. It's the apartment building, and you send in your rent by a certain time, or they threaten to kick you out within a day. You know, it's very draconian and faceless, and really kind of a disgusting way to live. But I mean, if you need a place, that's what you have. But a lot of times those places don't make it easy for you to pay in cash. Sometimes you can go to their office and deliver cash to them for your rent, but they tend to expect you to either do a direct deposit or send in a check. So those are options. You can make arrangements to pay in cash in for your living space, but I feel like the bigger and more official your living space, the less convenient it is for you to pay in cash, which is weird. But that's going to be a reoccurring theme throughout, because it seems like the more convenience you want, the less cash can actually purchase for you. Which I think traditionally, like at one point, the exact opposite was true. Cash was a lot more convenient and could get you certain deals that you know were a little bit above and beyond the check or credit card method of payment. Okay, so there's rent, there's food, there's paydays sorted. What else do you need money for? Well, money does things like get you internet service and utility bills and things like that. Now, once again, most of these places have options for you to pay in cash. Not all of them, to be honest, but most of them do. But you would have to make the physical journey to their office with cash, because it's not something that you could really do safely through mail or anything like that. So you'd have to go to their location and pay your bill in cash, which it is possible. It just takes a lot. It takes a chunk out of your day, and it's something that's reoccurring. It would be kind of cool if they would take really large prepayments. I think that would be super convenient, you know, where you could just say, look, let's just figure I'm going to have your service for a year, and let me come in and just put a bunch of cash down, and then you can take that cash and you can divide it yourself each month. You just take whatever you need off that stack every month and we'll just call it even. But it just doesn't, in my experience anyway, that's not usually how businesses want to work. They if they are billing you monthly for a service, then that's what they expect. And some services are variable in amounts anyway. So your utility bill, whether it's electricity or water or what's the other one? Oh, gas. All those things, they tend to be a little bit variable. So it would be difficult to prepay unless you overpay intentionally. And I guess that would work out. But yeah, it gets a little bit more complex. Other stuff that you might need in real life are, you know, the things that you get in general. So, I mean, for me, things like coffee and food at a cafe where I tend to do my work. Well, I'm saying where I tended to do my work. A lot of all of this is theory for me now, because I'm undergoing a bunch of immigration things that require me to do a lot of stuff sort of very visibly for the local government to observe that, yes, I am making money. I am not relying on social services to survive, and weird things like that. So a lot of this is right now on hold for me, because it's in my vested interest to maintain a healthy bank account, to demonstrate that I can manage a credit card responsibly. Stupid things like that, which in real life I couldn't care less about. But for immigration purposes, I'm trying to put on a good demonstration of my responsibilities. So that's in real life right now. Previously, however, other things that you might want in real life would have been, for me, coffee and food at a cafe where I tended to do a lot of work. Of course, now I work at home. That's a lot less important for me. But anyway, I'm trying to get to the point that there are things in real life that you need. You end up needing. And this is an interesting one for me, because this just really demonstrates the power of free culture. So in a lot of different realms of interest that I have, there's an alternative to whatever the big obvious target is. So for instance, with computers, for a lot of us, you yourself probably included, dear listener, there are alternatives to getting a computer. If you need a computer and you are a hacker, then chances are you know how to find a computer for very, very, very cheap, maybe even free if you know where to look. And it might not be something like, if you go to a store, like if you wake up one day and say, oh my gosh, I forgot all this time, I need a computer by noon today. Okay, that might not happen for you for free. But if you're thinking about it in advance, then very frequently, at least in my experience, you can find a computer, whether it's just posting an ad on a bulletin board somewhere advertising your services as a data transfer specialist. I can transfer your data from your old computer to your new computer, and then you take a couple of those jobs, maybe three at the most. One out of three of those jobs, you might just say, you know, instead of paying me today, you could I'll just take your old computer if you don't want it anymore. Done. You just got yourself a computer, and it's quite possibly a perfectly fine computer. So, or maybe you just know where to look. Like, you know the businesses that throw computers out. You know the loading dock where they stash them before the recycler comes by, or you know the dumpster that they throw them into, or whatever. You know where to look, and you get a new computer. Again, easy and free. Now, there might be parts associated with that you have to go purchase, like, oh, this one's going to need a replacement keyboard, this one's going to need a hard drive because they took the drive out and smashed it, something like that. And for that, the cash actually becomes a little bit more difficult, because you're looking at specialized parts for an industry that makes different versions of every single part every month, it seems. It's insane. I don't know why there have to be so many different, you know, laptop keyboards out there. Surely five different designs would do per language would be fine. But no, it seems like everything has to be redesigned every single iteration. So that becomes very difficult. Drives, hard drives are obviously a little bit, you know, better. Those are a little bit more standard. RAM, not necessarily. AC adapters, just as bad as keyboards. So there are weird things that you might find that you have to get. And a lot of times it's very convenient to get that online. You just go onto whatever site you typically go to for your spare parts and you order what you need and then they send that to you. Now, obviously that's not going to happen with cash probably. So, I mean, unless it's a local place where you can go and pick up the item and pay for it. But that'll get a little bit trickier with just cash. And I think, again, that's kind of a theme of this, is that the convenience factor goes way up if you have at least a bank account. And you'll find that cash, insisting upon cash all the time, I have found, in my experience at least, limits the options, the maneuverability you have when you're looking at an expense, you know, and you're saying to yourself, okay, I can get this $300 cheap computer. I know in getting that I am now supporting an industry that's overproducing stuff, and I'm buying something new, and it's going to come with Windows, which I'm not even going to boot into anyway. I'm just going to put Linux on there. And all these other drawbacks of going to really the trouble of going to get some new computer off the shelf. I mean, there are benefits as well, because you know it's or you can expect that it's going to be a reliable computer, that it's going, everything that you expect to work will probably be in working order, that sort of thing. So there are advantages, don't get me wrong, but a lot of times for us, for you and me, that's just not, those are features that are kind of like nice to haves, not necessarily need to haves. So the free stuff is quite good. And so you can look at that free thing and say, okay, so this is going to cost me $0, or maybe it'll cost me an afternoon of work if I have to help someone transfer their data off of it first before I can take it or whatever. But it's going to be cash light. And then I'll have to get some replacement part for this or that, or, you know, I'll need to get a new battery because the battery's completely shot. So that's maybe $100 right there. But then how do you get that part? Like, how do you actually get it? And so if insisting on paying in cash is limiting your ability to just say, cool, I can pay $100 for a used repurposed thing or $300 for a new thing that supports an industry that I'm not really super fond of, then I think I'd rather just have the bank account so that I can get that $100 part so that enables me to get this used thing, rather than saying, oh, I have to pay cash, so I have to go to the store and get this thing because that's the only thing in town that I can pay cash for. So that's kind of the way that I see it, and I guess it's mainly the reason that I've maintained a bank account for my adult life. I've never been without a bank account. It just hasn't really paid, as it were, to not have a bank account. So anyway, you have this cheap thing, you need this part, or maybe it's something else. Maybe it's something else entirely. Maybe it's a video game that you want to purchase, which that's a whole other category actually, but let's call it a video game. Or a book, even a book, a really good book that you want to purchase, and we all know that bookstores are basically non-existent now. So, you know, there's an expectation, in other words, is what I'm trying to say, that certain items are just, that you just go to the internet for them. That's what you do. And of course, that means that you need to have a bank account, credit card, whatever. So there's that limitation, sort of. Now, there are two answers to this limitation, this perceived limitation. And one of them is to go to a store. This doesn't work for everything. And I find it works less and less as the years get on. I haven't tried it lately at all, because I haven't needed to. But even in the U.S., towards the end of my stay in the U.S., it was starting to work less. But in the past, what I could do, I found, was go to a store, talk to someone. Usually it had to be like the manager. And for this reason, smaller stores were usually the better bet. Now, that's a whole other problem, because smaller stores are increasingly more difficult to find, like actually independent stores. But back when that was a thing and you could find them in certain towns, you could go to a store and talk to the manager slash owner slash whatever and just ask them to order a part for you. So it's much like you would like at an auto shop now. Like if you need some weird part for your weird car, you just go to an auto store and say, hey, you know, this is my car and this is the part that I need. Can you find that for me? And they can do that. They have all the resources that they have that I don't certainly understand. But, you know, I mean, it's just kind of like, yes, we can do that. We can order that part. We'll call you in a week. Whatever. And it's really convenient. And you used to be able to do that in stores. You could just go to the manager and say, hey, look, I'm looking for this book or this computer, you know, this exact model of this computer part or whatever. And people would just order it for you. And then they'd, I would imagine, I never really asked, but I have always assumed that they tack their markup on top of whatever they've special ordered for you. And then they sell it to you from there. So you're probably, you know, you're not getting those magical magical, like, Amazon.com or, what is it, AliExpress.com or whatever. You're not getting those magical prices of dirt cheap, straight from the factory to your door type deals, but you are doing it not completely, but you're doing it fairly well under any kind of radar, really. You're going to a third party, a middleman, to say, hey, get an item for me, and I will come back to you, and I will pay you cash, and then I will have that item. So it's a pretty slick way to go about doing business, if you can manage it. Like I say, these days, it seems to be a lot more difficult, because you can't, first of all, find an independent store anyway, and then even if you do, a lot of times they're just not, I don't get the sense that's something that really makes sense anymore, maybe. I don't know. I don't own a store. I've never owned a store, so I don't really know the politics, but I don't know what it demands of someone to just go randomly special ordering parts from stuff that's not on their usual kind of like delivery list or whatever. So I don't know if that's just not done anymore or if I just haven't tried lately, but other people are perfectly happy to do it. I don't know. But that's one way to do it. Now, the other way to do it, possibly, is to get a prepaid, like a gift card. And the gift cards you can purchase at least in the States, you can get them at any pharmacy, at a drugstore, you know, like CVS, Rite Aid, Duane Reade, whatever. You go there, you get the gift card, you put money onto the gift card, and then you use the gift card. And I used to do this quite often. It was pretty darn convenient. There's a weird sort of caveat there, and that is that some sites don't know how to take a gift card for some stupid reason, and I haven't run into this a lot, but I have run into it before, where you'll be purchasing or you'll try to purchase something, and for whatever reason, the site just will not understand, I guess, that the card, you know, doesn't actually have your name on it or isn't actually married to your billing address or whatever. So there are times where it will not work, but generally speaking, it works out okay, and that way you can get the things that you want to get without having an official bank account tied to your name. You can just have it with this floating bank account that is disposable after a while, or that will, you know, that will get finished up, will get used up after a while. There are disadvantages to this as well, in addition to the fact that some sites just can't handle the fact that there are gift cards in existence. But they, and by gift card, in case you don't know what I'm talking about, they're credit cards. They look exactly like a credit card. The ones that I've ever seen and had are Visa branded, and so you can, I think MasterCard probably has them too, but they've got that little logo on them, and you just purchase them and you put some amount of money onto them, you know, or you buy them in pre-declared values, like $100 card, you pay like $110. And there's another disadvantage, is that you're paying to buy the gift card, so there's a little bit of a service fee on top of that. And I think all the gift cards that I've ever seen, usually in really, really small print, have an expiry date. So you can get one this year, and if you get $100 and you only use up $50 because you're just super free and low maintenance and you just don't spend that much money, then especially online, then, you know, by this time next year, or might be longer than that, but there's a time frame where that gift card eventually just evaporates. Just the money that you had for no good reason, it just goes away. So I've always thought that was quite strange, and I never really much cared for that sort of that blatant money grab. But it's a thing. But by the same token, they're a thing that you can get them, and then you have that flexibility of, yeah, I've got a bank account. Look, here's my fancy Visa card that doesn't have my name on it and is a gift card, and it's got digits associated with it. So I'll give you those digits, and magically money happens. And that's all it is. So those are an option in addition to special ordering things from people with who are connected. Now, in theory, now I'm getting way out of my realm of experience. But in theory, if we're talking about, okay, so we're going cash only and we're going to live in a super inconvenient, non-connected way, how would we then even potentially begin to invest in things? And the important thing about investment and that concept to understand is, well, a lot of people say that you should invest, or you should save for the future, you should save for retirement, whatever. And we tend to, I think, get this idea of what investment is, and that generally is what I spoke of in my previous episode on personal finances, which is either a mutual fund or a certificate of deposit or stocks or a 401k if you're into the whole let the company and government manage your money and Social Security, stuff like that. But investment, like I've said earlier in this episode, investment is just, it's simply purchasing a good that is cheap today and more valuable at some point in the future. And there's a guarantee or a perceived guarantee, and I guess historically it's been pretty reliable, and for some definition of historical, and that is the guarantee with a big official sort of bank-sponsored investment or company-sponsored investment. There's kind of this guarantee that that when you arbitrarily decide, it's time to sell, time to cash in on my investment, then there's going to be a buyer. So in other words, it is completely expected that if you buy your $20 or let's say $1,000 shares of GWO, GNU World Order, the big company that has just gone public recently, and their stocks are super hot, so you buy $1,000 worth of stocks, and then you wait 40 years and you decide, okay, GWO has grown exponentially, gained a lot of money, thereby I have gained a lot of money. My investments are now worth a lot of money. So now I'm going to sell that. And so when you click sell in your Fidelity or your eTrade.com account or whatever it is that you signed up with, someone will just magically buy all of your stocks. They'll just fly out the door. There's a market there. There's a demand for it. You're going to get the money. You spent 1,000 40 years ago. You have a million now. You hit sell and now you have $1 million. Don't expect that kind of return on investments on anything, but I'm just using lots of numbers. So there's that expectation. Now, if you're investing in other things, so whatever those might be, you know, you hear people saying, oh, I'm going to invest in gold. I'm going to buy actual gold, and I'm going to squirrel it away in some safe location. And then in 40 years, presumably, gold will be more valuable, or at least no less valuable. And then I'm going to sell. Now, it kind of means that now you're able to find a market for that. Hopefully, in the 40 years that pass, you'll have discovered where all the rich people who just want gold hang out, and so that you can bring your bags of gold to them in 40 years, and you'll plop them down on the table, and they will give you $1,000 or $1 million or whatever it is. So there's less of an expectation, I would say, that there's going to be a market necessarily for whatever it is you chose to invest in. And then investment, like I say, it can be something sort of classic like gold, but it can also be in, certainly among the geek community, a lot of people rather famously invest in memorabilia, you know, so you buy the comic book, the New 52, the first volume of the New 52 from DC, of all your favorite superheroes, of their new origin story. You buy an issue of all those when they hit the shelf, and maybe you get the variant covers, and you know you got everything that you could possibly get for that set, and then you put it in the comic book sleeve, and you put it in a safe, temperature controlled, non-damp environment, and then in 40 years you're hoping that those comic issues will be worth substantially more than you spent on them. So if you paid $15 for a comic, then in 40 years you're hoping that they're, you know, 300 or 600, 1,000, 3,000, who knows? And obviously you don't really know what's going to hit. Possibly an artist who contributed to that issue will become very famous, and anything that he or she has ever touched will jump up in price. And then it's up to you to find that market. Again, it isn't like the stock market where it's super obvious where everyone's hanging out. They're at the stock market. It's a bigger, fuzzier market that you kind of have to just kind of hope that there's longevity in what you invested in, and that there's that whether or not there's longevity, that you can locate the person who has the ability and the desire to pay, you know, 20 or 100 times what you originally paid for the item in the first place. So those are the theories of investing, I guess, but more importantly, it's the theory of not partaking in a system that has everything recorded and tracked and traced back to your name and traced back to who you are and what you've done and where you've been. It's kind of a cool thing to at least know about, even if you don't necessarily go off the grid and close all your bank accounts and shut down all of your stock option things, your brokerage accounts or whatever they're called in real life. That's fine, but it's something good to know about, that sometimes there may be things that you want to purchase locally because it's less of a footprint. Or maybe sometimes there are things that you want to purchase online but not tie it to your bank account for similar reasons. Of course, if you're logged into your Gmail account by default all the time and you're doing anything and you think that you're being clever because you're using this card or whatever, trust me, it's all being tied back to this database entry of whatever and whoever you might be. So just be aware of that. But in terms of having the ability and flexibility of switching on and off the traceability of purchases and things like that, it's good to kind of remember that cash exists, gift cards exist, middlemen still exist. You can make certain things happen with smart purchasing habits. I'm not talking about drugs, just in case I don't know if I'm being too mysterious. I'm not talking about drugs or weapons or anything like that. I'm just talking about the freedom to live your life without necessarily having all of your life jotted down into a ledger. Okay, that's it. Thanks for listening, and I hope this has been somewhat informative or at least entertaining. Talk to you next time.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.